All right, how's everyone doing this morning? I feel like it's echoing. Okay, well, man, it is a sweet morning. Hello? I feel like I can hear myself. Do I need to do something? Why? Okay. Hello. Thank you, Matt. It's getting better. Okay, well, hey guys, today, you know, or last week we talked about being on the mountain and how it's always good to be there, but it's not good to stay there. And we really felt like the Lord wanted to continue with that theme of just what does it mean to go from the mountaintop to the valley? This is not going to work. I don't know. This is bothering me. Is it better? Okay. How do we go from the mountaintop to the valley? And so I want to title this message, really, we're going to go through Psalm 23. I've been meditating on Psalm 23 for a while now, actually. Have it memorized. I mean, many of you guys maybe have memorized. And I am not going to be, you know, dissecting this passage. There are so many great books and great teachings on this. But I do want to give a word and how to navigate the valley. That's kind of the subtitle, I guess you can say, is that we're going to realize how good of a shepherd Jesus is in all seasons. That he is a good shepherd in all seasons. No matter what season you find yourself in, he's a good shepherd. And, you know, I've realized that after walking with Jesus over 17 years now, with my wife. We met our freshman year at 18 years old, and we just celebrated Nicole's birthday this week. And one of the cool things was we were like, man, we've celebrated 16 birthdays together, and it just seems like, wow, it just to many more years together celebrating birthdays. But as we were just reflecting life and just what God was doing, realized he is a good shepherd in all the seasons. You know, I kind of forced myself because I was doing this teaching in Miami called Family Talk, and I had to really just dig through all my journals and try to find, you know, really the last 5 years of my life, just seeing what God has done. And man, you know, there's been a lot of valleys, but there's been some mountaintops, but it just seemed like there's just a lot of valleys, you know? And you realize that they're not so much, you know, from deep valley to deep to high mountaintop peaks, but it's more like hills, right? That's kind of what it looks like, at least in my mind, of what if I know, like, hey, I'm having a pretty good season, and you know, good season doesn't mean, hey, money's flowing in, and you know, oh, you're healthy. It just, you know, it's not always like that. And then all of a sudden, money's not coming in. Now you're in a valley. That's just so worldly. It's still thinking with a worldly mindset. And what I want to take us into is a little bit more than that. And so if you will, just turn to Psalm 23. But before that, I want to share really a few words that I feel like the Lord has been speaking over our church over the last really 5 years. And I've not shared too many of them publicly, but I want to just bring us into like the treasury of God, of just like what God has been speaking over our church. It wasn't, you know, God has always set us up to be a missional church. I mean, like I said, you know, if it looks a little lighter today, but it we're bringing 90 people to the nations this year. And that's just Colombia alone. And then we're also bringing like, I think what, 6 or 7 or something like that to Scotland this year. And we're kind of turning to, I knew that God was speaking Scotland for a while, but God is not only just bringing us to a prophetic conference there, but also we're going to do some evangelism and outreach. And God is just so good that he has called us to be a nation's church. And that's what he's called us to do. And really, there's two ways to really stay, you know, to stay healthy and moving towards the Lord and staying out of the enemy territory. We are taking land. One way is to take land, to be missional. The other is to go through inner healing and also, you know, through deliverance. And I've talked about that a little bit before. That's the sustainability piece. And as I was looking at just what God has been speaking over the last few years, somebody had a dream at one time a while back, when the church was first getting started, they saw all of us at a in our church. It was growing. It was a bigger building. People were coming, but these little kids were going into the bathroom, and there's something wrong with the foundation. And they were getting their heads kind of decapitated. Now, this is kind of weird. Okay, it's a dream. It's not in the natural. It's not the real interpretation of it. But what was, I always kind of like alarmed me. I'm like, what is that? We would share it with some of our, the people our oversight and other Antioch churches and some people that, you know, were gifted in this area of the prophetic. And so I would just ask, you know, what is that? What is that? Was it a warning, or are we, is there something not, you know, something off in the foundations that we're laying? And so we just kept that in our heart. And then just recently, or actually a couple of years back, we had another word that was when I was in Houston with a bunch of the pastors, about 10 pastors from the Antioch movement. And we're in Houston, Texas at a ranch. And so we're all sitting around. This one guy, he said, John, I feel like your church is definitely a missional church. And if you keep people on mission, they're going to be okay. But eventually, at some point, God is going to allow you to be a healing church. It's going to be a place where people come to find great healing and deliverance. And that is coming, but keep people on mission. So that we just obeyed that word and we kept people on mission. And God has been so faithful to that. Every year, it's always been above, more than half our church has been going to the nations. And that's incredible. I mean, this year, I think our church is around 160 people, and you know, we have 90 people going, and then even more than that to Scotland. I mean, it's almost 100 people. That's incredible. We need to celebrate that. And also, just recently, I got some texts, you know, this week saying people that weren't, we're going to go to Columbia, all of a sudden are going to Columbia now because they got all their finances in. It's just one lump sum. They're going now. And it's like, wow, God, you are like, we don't have a choice in this matter. You know, some people don't even have a choice. They're just getting money and they're like, well, I guess I'm going now. So it's just awesome. And so we want to celebrate that. But then also just recently, my wife and I, we went to Waco, Texas, and we are a part of this conference, this Missional Directors Conference. And it was about 5 years prior to going to this person's house. She had a vision of somebody giving us keys to a new house. And the person giving us keys to the new house were the Stedmans. So Don Stedman's in Waco, Texas. He kind of represents the international missions wing of our church. And so his son is actually on our board. He represents discipleship. He helps us in that area in strategy. And so that was Drew's parents, and then also we had his in-laws were the people that we stayed with, and they their ministry is Tending Your Heart, deliverance ministries, and pastoral care, and they're phenomenal at that. I've gotten ministry with them many times, and so when we actually had, so she had a dream about this house, their house, and it was very vivid about going through the hallway, and to the left is a room, and then there's a bathroom off the bedroom. And just recently, about 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, we went there, and it was the exact same house, and she had never been there. And she's walking through the hallway. To the left is the bedroom. In the bedroom, there's a bathroom off the bedroom, and it's the same thing, the same towels, pink bedroom, pink walls, pink everything. And there were diapers, just as she saw in the dream, there's diapers right above the toilet, which is you open up the cabinet and there's diapers, and there are 5 diapers. And so I was talking to these people that are kind of our prophetic oversight in our church in Scotland. And I was asking them, I was like, look, what does all this mean? I mean, these are crazy dreams. And I just, you know, God, just as he did with Daniel and Joseph and many others, God interprets dreams and he gives us words and he guides us many times through them. And as he was speaking, what he was saying was that in the first dream that you had, there was something was off, you know, and like you said, in the foundations. But as what happened was, as kids were coming in there, they represent the youth. They represent the immature, the people who are coming in who don't know much about God and coming out of darkness, and God is saving them, and he's securing them, he's growing them. But they're walking in, and their heads are being like cut off. What's happening is that old mindsets are being cut off. that what God is doing is that, again, it's found itself in the bathroom, and bathroom represents cleansing. It's where you get clean. And so God is wanting to bring an inner healing ministry to our church, a deliverance ministry to our church. And that I think what happens is, and you guys all know this, and I'll speak very frankly, that you guys know that every people that you disciple, they hit a wall. Or maybe yourself, you hit a wall, right? It happens every time. Like, hungry people come in. They're like, oh yeah, Jesus is amazing. Miami, awesome. And then all of a sudden, like months later, boom, they hit the wall. Everybody hits the wall. And sometimes what people do with that wall is they hit their eject button. They're like, I'm out of here. This is too weird. I mean, I thought we were going to have a Miami experience. I thought we were going to have just this mountaintop experience. I thought this is what Jesus owed me. I thought this is what it was all about. Why am I having problems in my marriage? Why am I having problems in school? Why am I losing my job? Why am I having problems with relationship? What's going on? What's happening? And they forget to look within. They just begin to blame outwardly. Or they blame the church, or blame something's off, or they don't have this, and all that. And so they hit this wall. But what Jesus is saying is, yes, you need to stay on mission, but Jesus is also bringing us this ministry so that we can get healed and whole. And what God is doing is he is healing us and strengthening us to send us. There is a season where we are just being sent and we're being catapulted in the nations, and God's like, yes, that's great. And there is something about us going and going, and just by faith, yes, I'm broken, but I'm going. And God will take care of that. But there is a season where God says, no, we're going to stop, like a father says, like we're going to stop with childish things, and we're going to mature, and we're going to grow together. And we're going to, you know, and one thing I know about the wall is that if you stand at the wall, you can't go over it, you can't go around it. You can run away, and we've talked about that in Miami, you just run away, run as far away from the fence, but this is not the fence. This is you running away from the fence, and you're hitting a wall. So now what do you do? Do you go back to the fence line, or do you keep going? But I don't know what to do with the wall. And God gives you these things called tools. And you begin to dig deeper into the ground, because the only way you can't scale it, the only way you're going to actually go through this wall is if you dig deeper and decrease the area, so that all you have to do is touch your finger on it and it begins to crumble down and you begin to walk through. That's what he's doing in our church. He's beginning to heal us and strengthen us. This is a pruning season. We've gotten many, many prophetic words on this is a pruning season. This is where we're doing things we don't want to do, but God is calling us to do them anyways. We're sticking in discipleship, even though it hurts, even though it's hard, even though it feels like, man, I'm hitting a wall there with this person or even myself, right? We all know the wall. And God is saying, like a good shepherd, I led you to that wall. It's not like you have to take a detour now. You got to face the wall. And in some seasons, it's pretty tiny and looks like you might be able with your own strength to jump over it, but don't do it. You'll hurt yourself. And so I want to go through Psalm 23 just to show you how good of a shepherd he is. But let's just go through that. I was gonna share one more thing, but Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And what he's saying is that King David. Now you can read this passage from verse 1 to 6, or you can read it from 6 to 1. It's really no order. I mean, it's almost like he shows me how good he is, how kind he is, and then he takes me through a valley at times. And at times, like after you've gone through the valley, you realize how good he is. You know, you could go both ways. But this is a beautiful, beautiful psalm that I don't want to wreck by just dissecting it. This is a beautiful psalm just by itself, just reading it. It's amazing how this psalmist, who is King David, is reflecting upon his life and saying, man, he's my shepherd. He is so good to me. He's always been there for me, no matter what. It actually says, not only I shall not want, I do not want in some translations. I don't want anything else because I found him to be so good. This is an experience. This is not like theology. This is not like some sort of like he's writing the facts down. He's writing an experience down. And there's something different than when you write an experience that you're writing that down. You're like, he is my shepherd. I don't want anything else.
You know, Song of Songs 6:3, it says, I am my beloved's and he is mine. What he's saying, that's an experience. Now, King Solomon is marrying somebody, but it mirrors what Jesus in the church, the relationship with Jesus in the church looks like. It's beautiful. He's like, I want to marry this person because I love her and I want to be with her. It's the same way that the church is saying, I want to be with this person. His name is Jesus because he doesn't just work for me. I want to be like him. I love him. He's mine. And I am his. It's experiential. And so he makes me lie down in green pastures and he leads me beside still waters. Do you know, I love this because it says that he makes me lie down. Like, how many of you know, literally, that makes sense to me. Like, he makes me lie down. Now, I'm not saying he's like cruel God. He's like, oh, I'm just going to get you sick or I'm going to break your leg or something like that. He's not some mobster. Like, he's, you know, going to break your leg. He doesn't do that. He loves you. But I've often find myself in these situations where I'm like, I grew up in a Sicilian home. That's why I'm like that. So, but I love that he makes me lie down because I don't want to lie down. You know, when I lie down and I eat and I drink from the river of his delights, as it says in Psalm 36, when I know that he satisfies me, then I like laying down. But the process of getting down and just being still is not easy. Especially in this day and age, it's not easy. But you know, I love the fact that some people might say, man, what a controlling God. He makes people do things. It's one perspective. My perspective is, I'm so thankful that I have a shepherd that makes me do something I don't want to do, but he knows it's good for me. He knows it's so good for me. He makes me lie down and say, you know what? There's a time for ministry. There's a time for rest. It's healthy. It's rhythmic. Rest rhythms that he puts into our lives. He says, it is good to rest. It's good to take off a day to rest and set aside for the Lord. You could either take time off and say, I'm going to obey the seventh day commandment of taking a day of rest, or he's just going to make me do it because he knows it works and he knows how human we are. All right, number three is he restores my soul and he guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. He restores my soul. What restoring is putting back together something that was lost. He's restoring something. He's restoring relationship with him. Like when we go to Miami, we forgot, wow, how awesome mission together can be. He's restoring like just the old habits that we were running into, the giving into sin, and he's restoring my fragmented soul back together. Isaiah 61, he binds up broken hearts, and he's binding that broken heart up. He's restoring it. He restores my soul. And do you know that all the paths that he guides us on are good? He's the leader of our life. Do you realize that? Do you know when you come here to church or you go to life group or discipleship, he's leading us in that? Do you show up to life group saying, the Lord's going to lead me here amongst his people? Do you show up to discipleship and submit to one another and say, he's going to lead me in this relationship? Do you know that he leads you only for his name's sake, for in righteousness, in goodness? It may not feel like that. I think even like discipleship, it feels awkward. You know, 70% of our church, we did like surveys, 70% of our church is discipled. That's amazing. Where most churches are like below 10%. They call it like a Bible study. They call it like a book study, which they start 5 chapters and then they stop. We disciple one another, and that's hard work. That's really, really hard work. But I'll tell you, most of our fruit comes out of the discipleship. Sunday gatherings, I'll say it again, is just a time where we get to worship corporately and get to move around the room and pray for one another because they're not in your life group or they're not in your sphere of influence. They're not in your day-to-day. And so it's so exciting to be with the family of God and to know where God's leading us corporately, not just individually or as a life group or as a little family unit. Isn't that good? He's got purpose and he's guiding us and leading us. Number four, this is the hard one. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Do you know that in other translations, the valley of death is deep darkness. And though it seems like that, now listen, this is not the enemy leading you in the valley of death. It's the Lord leading you in the valley of death. And can I say that in 1 Peter 5:18, I memorized this as a young college student. I remember this, is that the devil prowls like a roaring lion, waiting, looking and waiting to devour you. He's waiting for an opportune time when you're very weak, and he's in the valley. Now, here's the thing. The Lord leads you in the valley. And the reason why the valley is tough is because the way it's even shaped, that back in Israel, the time, it's like you're going from green, beautiful pastures, white sheep, water, blue water, sunset. It's beautiful, right? The scene is gorgeous. You want to rest. It just instantly provokes vacation and rest. But then all of a sudden, you're going through dark rock, and in those rocks are dangerous animals waiting to devour sheep. Sheep don't belong there, in a sense. The shepherd is leading them through it. They're not going alone. God's not saying, I'll meet you on the other side. He's walking you through that deep darkness. And it's deep darkness because in that valley, it cuts off the sunlight. There's only a certain part where it actually, like if it's 12 o'clock noon, there's sun. But otherwise, because the way it's shaped, you can't see the sun. And can I say that's even prophetic in a sense that the S-U-N or S-O-N, you can't see the sun. You can't see Jesus at times. That's why the valley's so hard. Because if you can actually picture Jesus, which is true, if you actually can picture Jesus walking through the valley with you, you'd be like, I don't care what's around me. Look, I got Jesus with me. But that's how we're supposed to actually go through because it's reality, even though we don't actually physically see it. Does that make sense? Everybody loves being in the pastures because you could see the shepherd, it's daylight and everything. People don't like going through. So can I just say that there are three things that the enemy wants to do to sheep like us in the valley: distraction, discouragement, or disappointment, and doubt. This is what he does. Does this sound familiar? You're in the valley. And the valley really is lots of things. It's a financial valley. You're in debt and things are squeezing you, like bills and payments and things are happening. It's maybe just an identity crisis, right? Many are still trying to figure out who they are in Jesus. It's relational problems. It's sickness. You know, I just got over being sick this week again. I'm like, man, what in the world? You know, it's like four times in the last 3 months. I was like, what's this going on? And it's not only that, but it's just the relational problems that we have, not only just in our marriages, but also the division that the devil has created in our lives. It's not only opposition in relational problems, but it's the offense, right? It's the offense that we feel with God and with each other. But you know that it's a pruning season. That the Lord is taking us through a very pruning season right now. And just like John 15, that we want to stay connected to the vine, but what he's doing is that like any good gardener, the Father wants to prune, and he's deepening us. We could get distracted by what God actually wants to do if we take the enemy's bait. And that's what he wants to do. He wants to come in and distract us. You know that whatever we focus on begins to grow in our lives. Right now, like when you think about the story of Moses, when he was right there at the edge in he's about to part the Red Sea, and they're about to go to the other side. All of a sudden, all the Israelites start flying their way, and they're coming in, and all of a sudden the Egyptians are coming their way, and the Israelites look at the Egyptians, and they're like, oh my goodness, wait, God just rescued us. We saw these 10 plagues. He loves us this much. He's bringing us to a new land. He's given us a new identity and a new place and a new purpose. And now all of a sudden the focus is shifted, and now the focus is on the enemy. And that's exactly where the enemy wants you. He wants you focused on himself, because whatever you focus on begins to grow. How many of you guys know that? It begins to grow in your life. All he has to do is distract you just a little bit with something else. He dangles something else before you, and that just gets large in your life. Not only that, but he distracts you from just the peace and the fellowship that you had with Jesus. You walk down the mountain and you're thinking, man, this is so great. Look at all this revelation. I got journal pages. And then all of a sudden there's just this sense of like silence. Like there's not much coming from the voice of God. And you're thinking, where are you right now? Why can't I hear you as much? Why can't I? And sometimes that's sin, but a lot of times that's just distraction again. Like we're back on our phones 24/7 again, just like looking at just stuff that it's not bad. Like not, I'm talking like something like pornography or something, just wasting time on Facebook or wasting time, just videos and eating hours and hours up. And we're supposed to be at Jesus's feet in during this time. Like Mary came in and found Jesus's feet and stayed there and listened to his voice while Martha was busy and distracted. It actually uses the term distraction. What is she distracted from? There's a reference in your Bible, if you have like one of those Bibles that shows references, it's she's distracted from the one thing, Jesus says. Do you know that's a reference to? Psalm 27:4. The one thing that I seek, the one thing that I ask, is to dwell in the house of the Lord forever, to meditate on his word. It's David. It's like the one thing that he wanted is his whole life is just his presence, to be obsessed with God's presence. And Jesus actually affirms that in Mary and says, she's found the right thing. She's doing the right thing right now in this moment is to be at the feet of Jesus. Yeah, we can play defensive all day long with distraction and just say, hey, help me not to be distracted. Help me not to be distracted. That's not how you play the game. How you play the game in the valley, how you defeat distraction is to be obsessed with Jesus's presence. I've got to find you in the valley. I've got to find you right now in the valley. I've got to find you. I've got to get at your feet. I've got to know you. But I'm telling you, it is both a strategy in the valley, but we've got to prep before the valley. We've got to prep before we get into the valley, into the mess. And I think a lot of times is a lot of people are like when things are sort of good, they begin to get distracted even before they get in the valley. There's a habit in which God wants us to get into. It's a habit of his presence. It's a habit of being aware of his presence. It's a habit of getting at the feet every day to cultivate a deep well in God and his word. Do you have that? Do you have a deep treasury of testimonies and his word and journals and just constantly saying that, yes, they might pile up this high, but man, I want more. I want more. I've got to have more because when you go finally through the valley, sometimes I think there's a place where you don't even know you're in the valley. Have you ever met people like that? Where they're just like, you're in a valley. And they're like, I am. Yeah. You are in a valley. I see this, and this happen in your life. And I'm just like dumbfounded. How do you stay? The only thing the person can say is because I've developed an amazing, deep, rich well in the Lord. And I don't even know what season I'm in. It doesn't really matter. I'm like with Jesus the whole time. Can we live like that, church? That's how we're supposed to live. It's not like, oh my gosh, we're in the valley. Now we got to figure out, like set the alarms, got to get up early. No, you get up early before the valley. You get with Jesus before it hits. So the other thing he does in distractions is he distracts us from commitment and he gives us complacency. He replaces commitment with complacency. And what he does is he whispers in our ear and he tries to get it in the personal, like first person, so he gets you to say it yourself, like, I think I'm good. I think I'm pretty good. Never say that out loud or in your head. It's never a good thing to just sit there and say, you know what? I think I'm pretty good. It's scary because it's like, oh no, like, have you ever done that before? Like you just kind of you get complacent and you lose commitment. I don't know. Maybe I'm speaking another language this morning, but it's like this stuff is real. And I watch people fall off the cliff of complacency all the time. Oh, I'm complacent. I'm okay with where I'm at right now. That's dangerous to plateau. And it feels good. The beginning workings of plateauing feels really good. It really does. It feels okay. It feels like normal. It feels good. I just got done with this book. I feel like I just got this amazing word. I feel like now finally someone's going to recognize me to lead a life group. And I'm kind of good. I just did enough to kind of get by. And then all of a sudden, I just kind of fall flat. And God's saying that's dangerous territory, because all of a sudden you're not going to, he's going to get you to the point where you're complacent, to the point where you have no commitment anymore, to not commitment to a church, but commitment to himself, to commitment with Jesus, that I want to grow. He promised that he'll make me into the likeness of Jesus, Philippians 1:6. He promised he will finish that task in me, but he's asking me to continue to walk in him and not stand still. It's not okay to stand still. This race is meant to be won. This race is, you are meant to cross the finish line, not stand. This is not a Christianity of standing. We're moving. We're constantly moving towards him. That's how you actually defeat the enemy of distraction. Number two is discouragement and disappointment. Ultimately, the enemy wears us out. And one of the things I put is the foxes clutter the garden. And honestly, like, I think many times, guys, that, like, have you ever just been to the point where you're like, with not just mundane tasks, but just things that happen in your life that just wear you down? Like, I got to make phone calls. I got to call insurance companies. I've got to do this. And this person's just, you know, just giving me a hard time. And then I'm bunny trailing. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh my gosh, what day is it today? Like, it just, you forget, and then you go to bed that night and you get up the next morning and you don't even feel like spending time with Jesus. You just feel discouraged. You feel disappointed because you thought it's expectations that are being lost. It's like you expect God to move in this way. You expect people to act in this way. You expect people to call you at this time or whatever, and it doesn't happen. You just constantly get distracted over and over and over again, and there's just a distraction. I mean, I just and a discouragement, and I feel like those the Song of Solomon shows our, like a visual of our intimacy with Jesus, and it's like a garden. What we tend to begins to grow. And he says that in Proverbs, that whatever I tend to, if I tend to morning times with Jesus and I tend to the discipleship relationships that I have, it's going to grow. But what happens is the enemy like opens the gate and he begins to flood that place, that garden of intimacy with God. He begins to flood it with foxes. And all of a sudden those foxes are beginning to ruin the place where I've worked so hard for. Does that make sense? And we need to be diligent and aware and alert. Really, the name of the game is being alert of his presence and being alert of what the enemy is doing in the valley. And number point B is we lose perspective. We're like, you know, it's some of the phrases that we have in our mind when we get discouraged. I don't know if you guys have had these before, but I'm alone. No one cares. I must not be made for that anymore. Nothing ever works out for me. Are you familiar with these lovely phrases? It's just perspective. They're not true. Just because I'm in the valley, then all of a sudden these voices are magnified. And God is saying, they're not true. That's not who you are. Things will work out for your good. In fact, if it's not working out for your good right now, it means it's not the end. Means I'm not through with it yet. I'm not through with taking you through the valley. I'm not through. And so I believe what God is saying is that when these phrases come, it's 2 Corinthians 10:4-5. These are the weapons that we have. These are the weapons of warfare. We take that thought captive and we say, okay, I can have the victim mentality. Nothing ever works out for me. And you could put that on paper and say, let's just look at that. Nothing ever works out for me. Is that really true? Nothing ever works out for me. When you actually just say it out loud sometimes, it's like, because you keep saying it to yourself in belief, and you need to throw it on paper, and you need to throw it at the feet of Jesus and say, dude, is this true, Jesus, about my life? That nobody really does care? I think the only way you're going to win is, yes, you need the perspective of getting friends and family around you. But I think there are people in this church, and even including myself at times, that rely a little too much on people to get us through seasons. We need a deep, rich well in God again. We need, like David, like he said, when all his family were being taken and all he had is all these people around him, you know, they weren't going to help him. David's mighty men were not going to help him at this point. Why? Because they wanted to kill him. Like, you're not pulling through for me, David. So he was lost, lonely, but he didn't freak out because he had this treasury with the Lord. He was able to say, I'm not going to run back to the fence line. I'm going to stay right here, keep digging. Dig, dig, dig. What is he saying? He was strengthening himself in the Lord, it says in 2 Samuel. It's a strengthening. Do you have a place in your life where you can say, I strengthen myself in the Lord? It's a strengthening of yourself in the Lord. And that looks like, journals and worship sets and different things that you have. But it's even more than those things. It's a mindset. It's being able to, because you have the Word of God. I'm telling you, there are times where if I'm wasting time and it's like, oh, God's like, just come away with me and get into my word. It's going to pay off. It always pays off. I think we're very illiterate in the scriptures and we're trying too much to rely on people than we are on God because it's easier, but then eventually they disappoint. You get halfway through the valley and it works, but the other half of the valley is only going to be by the Lord. It's only going to be by Jesus. And so all of a sudden you're listening, oh, I think you should do this. And, you know, I hate when like things are going like really tough in my life. And then all of a sudden people come in and they're like, well, maybe you're not doing the right thing. Sometimes that's true. Other times it's just a lie from a person that means well and is trying to help us. But the Lord's saying, they can't help you right now. Only I can. Because I know your beginning, I know your end, and I know your middle. They can't help you. And then all of a sudden you get mad and you're like, I don't like those people anymore. I'm going to go to another church. Fine. Then go through to another church and go through another valley. Because you're going to go through a valley no matter what church you're in. So you might as well stick with one church and go through the valley together because only half the valley is going to be with people and the other half of the valley is going to be with Jesus. In other words, you're going to go through a valley just with Jesus. So cultivate a deep role in him and cultivate deep friendships in them. That was a good word. That was a good word. No, sorry, I do that to myself all the time. It just comes. The other thing is doubt and unbelief. Sorry, it's a little intense. John 10:10, the devil comes to steal, kill, and destroy. But I love the last part of that. But the Lord wants to give life abundantly to us. And that is in the valley. It's like that is a passage for the valley. That's the passage for when the wolf is standing at the door, ready to come in, ready to do something evil in our lives. And the Lord is saying, I've come to give you life. And the devil's like, I've come to destroy you. You know, it's like, that's all it is. And we've got to trust one of the two voices because we can't serve two voices or two masters. You can't hear two, like, let me shout in one ear and let somebody shout in another ear. You're going to be so confused, but that's how most Christians walk with, you know what I mean? And I think sometimes, you know, I don't know if you know, but I'm deaf in my right ear. I had that since birth. I take that as a privilege. I'll take the deaf ear to the enemy and the ear that I can hear to the Lord. And that's what God is, it's good. But that's what we need to do in a sense. Use me as a prophetic image, I guess, for your own lives. Don't pray over deafness, but that's what he said. He has given you life, because David didn't come to the end of his life and say, the Lord's not my shepherd, or sometimes he's my shepherd. He is my shepherd, and I do want him. Not sometimes I kind of want him and don't want him. Guys, the only way we're going to change the world, the only way we're going to actually have momentum and actually do this thing is if he is my shepherd all the time and I do not want anything else. You can't have the world. You can't have your cake and eat it too. Right? Somehow we believe the lie, we want the cake and we want to eat it too. And that's okay. But it's not okay. It's not. You can't have both. You can't serve two masters. This dual, double life stuff that doesn't work. He either is your shepherd and I don't want, or he's not your shepherd and sometimes I want him. And sometimes I want him because he does nice things for me, and then I don't want him when things don't work out well. Like, I don't want God because he's not doing, people don't like me right now, or people not giving me attention. Well, woe is you. There's most of my life, it's like that. I mean, we have a fear of man or fear of God. I mean, you can't have both. The satisfying life is fear of God. And you won't be liked. And that's okay, but Jesus never said you'll be liked. Never, ever, ever does any passage ever say, oh, you'll be liked. No, there's nothing there. In fact, all he says is, you'll behave like me. You'll be, what happened to me, it'll happen to you. Now, you'll do great things and you'll do better. He says, you'll do more things than I did, greater things than I did, but you won't be more liked than I was. If I was hated, you'll be hated. And look, there are people in this church. One of the most saddest things I've ever seen so far is when people like leave sometimes because of other influences. Like, don't go to that church. You're growing. That's interesting. Maybe the enemy is in that voice. I don't know. I mean, God loves you enough to say that if you're growing, that's probably where you need to be. But then all of a sudden, we want the parental exception because it comes with almighty dollar. We want acceptance because it comes with job promise. But who are we in this thing for? The valley. See, trials don't build character. They reveal character. What that happens is when you walk through the valley, you're like, man, this is awesome. And all of a sudden it's like, dang, I just got hit here. And when you get hit, something comes out. And it's like, I'm selfish. Okay, continue to walk through the valley. You know, another hit. I'm prideful. All right, I thought this valley thing was supposed to build character. No, it's supposed to reveal character. And when you make it through, there is a building up. There is a building up, but you got to get through. Because when you climb up on the rocks, try to get out of this thing, it's called pride and self-sufficiency. Oh, this thing is not working because I just keep getting hit and I'm looking at Jesus and he's not doing a lick of good. So I'm going to find a way out of this thing. And I'm going to try to find some theology to get myself out because I need that in order to justify myself. In other words, you climb up the rocks and you navigate the enemy. You know, you try to navigate it and you climb up and you get out. But did you ever do that? Did you ever like eject out of a trial? I think sometimes it's a worse feeling when you have a deep well in God. You know, you have a deep relationship with him. It's a worse feeling because I feel like I've just cheated a test and you got an A+ on it. And you know, you just looked at the other guy's paper the whole way through. It's like that feeling, like, I did get the A+. I did pass the class, so I don't have to take that class anymore. But the way I got there was messed up, and now I don't know the information to actually do the job right. You see what I'm saying? So you're climbing up the mountain, and you're getting out of the trial for what? What do you? That's not helpful for you. That's not building anything in your life. But yeah, no, I want to be the leader of this. And I want this ministry on my life. You can't have any ministry without character because the world is looking for something different, not the same. Something different. Can you give them something different, church? Do you want to give them something different? That's what we want to give the world, something different. And difference comes, I'm going to walk through this valley. And I'm going to show where the witness comes. Sure, it comes like, wow, look, God, I'm on the mountain right now. I'm in the little pasture in the hill and I'm drinking water. It's great. Hey, do you want to come to church? this is awesome, man. Check this out. Look, all these flowers. This is so pretty. It's so nice. It's so inviting. Of course people want to come to church that way. But there's another side to things. There's another side. There's disappointments. There's discouragements. There's things that happen in our life. But I'll tell you what's more inviting is watching you go through the valley and you come out on the other side. Forget the pastor, man. Now I want your God. Because I saw something different. Because Buddhism offers the green pastures and the sand. Little stupid fork that they have. Ooh, peace. No peace. Still the same. But it kind of gives that kind of feel and a sense of like every religion in the beginning looks like the green pastures, but what's different? What's different? You know what's different is when you believe a God and trust a God that says, I love you and I want you to look like me. And the only way that you're going to look like me is to walk through this with your hand cusped to my hand, and we're going to walk this thing out of this nasty, dark hole, but it's good for you, and we're going to get to the other side, and there will be birds chirping and sunshine and rainbows and everything else. It's going to be awesome, but just so you know, we're going to go through it again and again and again and again. That's church to me. That looks more like church to me than anything else. That's what you hopefully signed up for. Because if you didn't sign up for that, then this is not home. You've signed up for something else that's not real. You signed up for something else that's not going to last. Because this is more real. Like sickness is more like real. Like going through hard times is more real than anything else. Like talking to my friends and family that are going through really tough times is more real. They're getting through it, and there are great times. And I'm not saying be fearful of the mountaintop. People can be more fearful of the mountaintop and success than they can of the valley, because it's just, you can't lose anything when you're in the valley, right? When you're on the top, it's like, oh no, I got all this awesome stuff. I know where we're going. Because, wow, God's saying, well, why'd you put all your hope in that stuff anyways? So let's cut it out. Let's get up. And all he's doing is, he's not giving you more stuff so you could take it away. That's not like that's a twisted view of God. He's a good shepherd, and he's wanting you to look like him, because when you look like him, you're satisfied at the core of your being. You're satisfied in God. That's why we do church. God is going to, this year, he's going to, this summer, this time, we're going to go through the life of Daniel and the life of Joseph this summer. It's going to be a powerful time. Why? Because college students are becoming young adults. And young adults are becoming families. In other words, he's maturing us as a church. It's a slow kind of beautiful, as one man put it a couple of years back, and just saying, John, he's doing something very unique in your church. It's a slow kind of beautiful. It's slow. It's unrecognizable. It's people won't really pay attention to it, but they will down the road. They'll wonder what in the world you do, and you can't give them some sort of easy manual. It's like relationships. It's going through the valley and then making it out of the valley together as a church with our Savior and our Shepherd. That's what I want to sign up for. I want something real and I can sink my teeth in. I might get all jacked up, share vision, all that. That's all good. But it's time to like be sober at times. It's time to say, hey, God, what is this thing really about? Because you know what? You don't want someone to lie to you. Because when you're in the valley of the shadow of death and deep darkness, you'd want to punch my face, honestly, because you're like, that guy just lied to me and said everything's going to be okay, everything's going to be awesome, everything's going to be this way. Because it will create bitterness in the leadership of a church. It'll create bitterness in the Bible and people and who God is. It's going to create bitterness. Does that make sense? It's going to create a bitterness and a frustration. I've gotten mad at preachers at times because I'm like, no, you're crazy. That's not how it is all the time. At least that's not what I read in the scriptures. That's not what I read about. This is hard stuff. There's amazing times of joy and celebration, but there's times where I have to go through stuff and it hurts and it's hard. That's more like what I see. And we're in it with you. We're going to be in the valley with you. We're going to do it. And there are times where I'm going to say, I can't really help you. You got to go. I'm going to be there with you. But there's just my words. I mean, Jesus is really going to have to pull you through. You're really going to have to dig deeper in Jesus right now. You're going to have to get in his word a little bit more. Then you're going to have to meditate on those healing passages. By your stripes, we are healed. I have the armor of God, the helmet of salvation, the breastplate of righteousness, the belt of truth, the shoes of readiness, the sword of the spirit, and the shield of faith. Something I'm memorizing. I talk to myself every day in the armor of God, every day. Psalm 91, protection. I will not fear the terror that comes at night. And terror comes at night at times. Can't sleep. It's restless. I won't fear that terror because God is with me. Or the arrow that flies by day. The oppression, the opposition, the people, the breakups, the things that happen, the hurt, the pain from people. And the arrow, I'm not going to fear that because God is with me. And if I hide under the shadow of his wings, that means closeness. That means I can't be under his shadow when I'm far. I got to get close. I got to get under. I got to get underneath and safe. And that's where my safe place is. And I got to believe that without a shadow of a doubt that God is going to be my refuge. He's going to be what I need him to be today. Is that good? That's what we're talking about. Real, authentic life. And walking with Jesus. It's good. All right. We become protective in the valley. We forget what he wants to do. We become protective. Don't be protective. You can't protect yourself. When you walk in, just understand that his great wings are over you. And he's walking with you. Jesus is a friend to you. The Father is a refuge in a he's a big dad, and he's got you. He's a big dad. Do you look at him that way? He's a big dad. Do you really, like, when you go through stuff, do you say, you're a big dad, you're going to get me out of this thing? I heard like the story of Moses where the burning bush, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 times this week, and it was in my kid's devotional. So again, Ella had this, we have this journal, and then we'll close here so we can have the band come in. Ella's got this journal, and we write 3 things on it. We write lesson, what prayers, and what God says. It's kind of like our 3 things. Those who have babysit our kids, at times you see that journal and we just write it in there. And I write for all of our kids. And so Ella can't read right now, so I'll do the devotional with her. Sometimes Nicole will. And it was just this, the burning bush. That was the lesson that day. And I said, honey, what did you learn from this whole deal? She's like, just not to be afraid. I was like, really? Just what else? Like, that God is with me. I'm not going to be afraid. I don't have to be afraid anymore. What that does to my heart, that my little daughter's like, I'm not going to be afraid. It's just so matter of fact. She's just very matter of fact about it. Like, that's just what it says. That's what God says. I'm not gonna. Can we have that childlike faith? Because that's what's gonna get us through the valley. So this morning, what I want to do is I know there's a lot of defensive talk, more like, you know, distractions, discouragement, doubt, and all that. But I want to give you again just a reminder of what God says. He's reminding us of a few things. I don't know if you have that up here. He says, I'll just read this. I'll fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. And you have anointed my head with oil, and my cup overflows. In other words, David is saying he is satisfied. And I've always wondered, what does it mean to actually, like, when God says, I'm preparing a table before you? Before my enemies, like there's a table. Like, I don't understand. Am I like sitting down? Am I eating and enemies are watching me or something? Like, yeah, that's what it means. But I'm like, well, what does that mean though? Like, what is that? How does that benefit me? I don't want to eat and dine with my enemies per se. These can be both spiritual and real. Is they watch me enjoy my rest with God, and it is a testimony. When he gives, when I'm going through hard times and in the valley, he sets up this table. He says, come and dine with me. Remember what he says? He says he knocks on the door in Revelation. He says he knocks on the door, and it's not a salvation message. It's a fellowship message. He's saying, I want to dine with you and eat with you. And what he's saying is, I want to do it in the presence of your enemies. I want them to see how peaceful you are and how at rest you are, because that will serve as a testimony of my goodness. I don't think you'll actually win-win. Like, I'm talking about winning in the end. And I could share so many stories. But I watched literally a whole, like when I was a youth pastor, I got let go of a job unrighteously. Now God used that. He planted this church, not out of a bad seed, but out of a very good seed. It was a calling. But it was a very painful time, because we built that youth ministry from zero to about 200 people, and people were getting saved and healed and set free. It was incredible. It even got some national attention or whatever. It was just an incredible time. But it was really a painful time, because my pastor came back from, he was never there for me, but when he came back, I remember him seeing, there was these cameras from basically a documentary from California, or a film crew, and they did a documentary from California, came in, they set up camp, and he had started coming back from his divorce, and he came back, and he was, I remember this day, it was really chilly, and I was sitting in the room. And the cameramen, they slept overnight at the youth house, and he didn't know about what was going on, because he was never there. And so he was like, what's going on? These cameramen, like, this is kind of weird. And I remember I was like, they had those big, huge light things, and I just felt uncomfortable, because I was like, I just doing what God's called me to do. And so I'm sitting there, and they're like interviewing me and all this stuff. And he was like peeking through like the window, and it just gave me the heebie-jeebies. It was just like, oh my gosh, this is so creepy, you know? And I knew, like, it wasn't too long after that I lost my job, because he was so jealous. He was so envious. Jealousy took him out. But yes, it was an enemy, and it really hurt, because we had a family to support and all these things, and a youth ministry that came to our door, knocked on our door. And this time that I've been called to plant Antioch, Orlando, and it was just a crazy time. It was almost 5 years ago. And I just thought, oh my goodness. I felt like these enemies they're watching me and how I respond. And this is a big deal. Like, how am I going to respond? And I remember when they fired me at like 11 o'clock at night when I went to World Mandate in Texas. Because I prayed with my pastor that morning. And he said, you know, we that night, 11 o'clock at night in Dallas, he said, we got to let you go. And I remember him saying, bring all the youth with you, but don't tell them anything. Just bring them with you. Because see, what they wanted to do is they wanted to keep all the youth at the church. They didn't want them following me. They were afraid of losing everybody because of this. They knew what they were doing, and they wanted to cover up. And I knew all that, because I had, you know, and Kathy Ann, one of the girls in the youth group, she got a vision of a crown on my head, and it was like, this is over. You know, I was almost about to turn 30 years old, and I was like, oh no, you know, I'm going through the walk, I'm going through the walk here, and I'm going to die. You know, like, this is over. This is what it means. It means death. And but God resurrects something, right, after death. And I knew he was doing it, so I held on to that. But I remember all these people that I used to walk with there, they would watch every step of the way, whether it's through Facebook, or whether it's through selling a home miraculously, or whether it was like favor of money, people just handing us money like randomly, like people putting money like on our car, like going to the car and be like, there's an envelope there. There's cash inside of it. Mysteriously, like people would just give us money and like hand us stuff because they believed in what we were doing, what God was doing. He was doing something brand new. And I really felt like this was it, the valley. And I felt like he was preparing like a table before my enemies to watch. How is he going to respond? And I remember getting that phone call because my wife saw him put the pastor put arms around women that were not his wife. We saw things. We heard things. We heard a lot of things. But we felt like, should we say something or should we just let the Lord vindicate? That's hard to do, isn't it? We want to fight our own battles. We want to justify. We want to win. We want to go out and make things right. That was the hardest time, and I soaked up the Psalms over and over and over and over again. The psalmist saying, God vindicates. He vindicates. And look, there are times when David does say, get him, Lord, get him. And I was like, get him. But that would be in the quiet place, not at the table. Not at the table in the presence of the enemies. I would say, go get him. I hope this, because that's cursing. We can't curse and bless out of the same fountain. And so I remember that time because God was saying, he's building your authority right now. What that seed in which you plant this church is going to either be a good seed or a bad seed. It's going to be a reactionary seed or it's going to be a good seed from the Lord. And it's his seed that he is wanting you to plant into the ground. It's going to be good. And I want to let you know that this church was planted in a good seed. It was right. It was beautiful. It was not reactionary. And I want to say this also, that when I got that phone call, that the pastor, they found out that the pastor fell, he was having affairs and doing different things, inappropriate, they kicked him out of everything. And you know, at that point, my heart broke. And I knew that I was healed. I knew that I was healed. Why? Because I didn't have one bit of vindication in my heart. I didn't say like, yeah, God, that's right, baby. Whew. Behind the scene, hand slaps. I didn't even do one of them. And I'm not bragging, but it was the work of the Lord. And before the presence of my enemies, I can sit there with my hands crossed, sit up and say, it was the Lord. And I saw him one time just playing with my family on the beach. We were just having a great time. We were laughing and singing and having an awesome time. I mean, it was an amazing time with my family on the beach. And I remember seeing him walk miserably down the beach. And I said, oh, I feel horrible for that man. He lost everything. He lost everything. And rightfully so. But I didn't have one ounce in my heart that said, good. I said, man, I could have been that man if it wasn't for your grace. I could have been that guy if it wasn't for your mercy and your grace. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. I don't have to fear him. I don't have to fear anybody else. I have authority. My words matter. My words count. Do you want that kind of authority, church? It's not flexing your arms. It's not being loud. It's real authority. It's raw power. Raw power. Many don't have that kind of power because they walked up the rocks too early. They got out of the valley a little too soon. They gave in to doubt and distraction, discouragement, discomfort, all those things. They gave up too soon. They realized the Lord is not my shepherd. He didn't lead me well. But God is wanting you to know he is your shepherd. He will lead you well. Walk through the valley of deep darkness. Walk through the valley of deep darkness. Walk through it with him. His hand is with you. His rod and his staff will comfort you. Do you want to know what his staff does? His staff kept pulling me in. That little hook part kept pulling me and said, John, don't leave. Don't do it. There's been so many times I wanted to do it. And the other part of that rod part, he beats off wolves. And he's beaten off so many of them. And it's great, but he does it, not me. I don't have to talk around people's backs. I don't have to try to make things happen and twist things and make things so that I'm the man and I got, everyone knows how awesome I am. I was misunderstood. People said that I was this and called me names and said I was this. I mean, all, if I told you all sorts of stuff, I mean, just in restaurants, they would go in restaurants and there's a restaurant owner that would just literally just say, look, this is who this man is. You go to that church, you go to that youth pastor, you're gonna get this and this. I mean, just slander. People are like, you need to sue those guys. No, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. We had to leave our house one day. I had a phone call from a guy and saying, hey, I'm coming after you and your family. We had to go to an undisclosed area, like pick up our the whole family, go to an undisclosed area because he wanted to come and hurt me, or even more, he wanted to come after me. And he's like, you better leave right now. I'm coming right after you. I had to go to the police. I had to do all this stuff. I'm like, what is this? Crazy, crazy, crazy stuff that you never, ever, hopefully ever have to go through. God took me through that. Because he loves me. Not because he wanted to me be a pastor of a church. Because he loves me. And I've always said, if this thing falls apart and unravels, I know that he's my shepherd. I know that my cup overflows. And not many people can say that. And what I'm saying, church, is please, by the end of your life, will you have that treasury? Could you have that testimony? Could you just have that testimony? Forget all the other stuff. This is so rich and so beautiful that I could stand here up in front of all these people and say, look, the Lord is my shepherd. I don't want anything else because I found him to be good. I found him to be trustworthy. The nutsos, the crazies, the whoever else can say whatever they want to say. People can defame you and talk about you and whatever they want. They can do whatever they want. But you know what? The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. And he says, surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. What is he reminding you of? That you're his. What is he reminding you of? That we are each other's. And what is he reminding you of? He sets you apart. He's saying, John, I've set you apart for great purposes. I've made you for myself. I've made you for them in the room here. And I've made you for a great purpose. I've made you for a great purpose. That's why he sets you apart. Oil sets you apart. And so church, what I want to do is I want to spend some time in just responding to the Lord this morning and just saying, I think there are some people that are very fearful of going through the valley. And just, let's just break that off. I'm not saying like be some weird sick person to be like, hey, look, I want the valley, baby. Like that's what we're about. We're the church of the valley, you know? No. We're a church of Jesus, whether we're in the valley or on the mountain. That's who we are. We're a people that are for him because he's for us. And if he's for us, who could be against us? The little guy tucked in the corner and ready to, looking at us kind of weird and looking up, ready to devour us? No, he can't touch us. He can't touch us. Nothing can harm you and touch you because you're his if you want it. And so let's just stand to our feet and just... let's just respond to him right now and just ask Jesus to come in. Father, we ask you now for, would you just come in and just come and fill us up?